Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Safe Room, a survival horror game club podcast. My name is Grace, and I'm with my regular co-host, Rose.
Hello.
Hi there. How's it hanging? Saturday, beautiful Saturday morning.
It's beautiful Saturday morning, if you can believe it.
If you can believe it.
And a dog has been barking for the past hour and a half.
Well,
but I'm good. I'm feeling good. I'm feeling like I played a survival horror game recently.
That's right. We sure did. we played Alyssa. Is this 2021? When did this come out?
2020.
This is like classic, like Resident Evil 1, and I do not mean the remake type beat. It looks a little bit like Alone in the Dark, even. I think we're kind of a similar beat with this. I thought this was all right.
Yeah. It was decent. And I think the ending really soured me on it.
Well, you texted, it was like, oh my god, there's the worst thing ever in the late bit of this game.
Wasn't even referring to the ending either.
So that was about the stealth segment, I presume.
You're close. It was about the on-rail shooter segment.
I had less trouble with that than the stealth segment.
I died like 4 times.
Yeah. I think I died because 3 times. Well, you can't move and aim separately.
You also move slow as shit.
Yes, it's true.
So you basically have to trial and error the fucking dodging mechanic.
There's the one, because a couple of them, it's like you get enough warning time where it's like you know where he's going to shoot. But let me, we should... I feel like this is going to be a very like mechanics heavy episode because
this is also unfortunate. Like I want to just say up front, because this was made by like one guy, and I don't want to clown on the one guy. I just want to this game is very technically impressive. It looks amazing. The music is fantastic.
Yes.
It is very fun aesthetically. However, as a podcast that has played many, many survival horror games throughout the years, there are particular gameplay choices that... that I did not care for. So
yeah,
I just want to say that, because I do feel bad for if we just clown on this game and not acknowledge that it's just one dude making this.
So. Yeah, well, no, it is really like, I think it. I love the pre-rendered cutscenes. Like it really feels
so good.
Like a game that would have been made by 30 people in the 90s, you know? It feels like it could have come out in that time. And I feel like that is impressive.
And there's a lot of there's a lot of really cool, just like things that are pre-rendered that just look like they come from like a Final Fantasy 7 or something. It looks really cool.
Yeah. No, for sure. Well, it also has like, it's kind of, there's sort of a, like, again, it's a little bit more RE1, you know, like it's a little more bare. there's it's not exactly austere because it is this like lavish house, but it has this sort of like kind of smooth quality to it, mm-hmm. That I think makes it like really nice to look at, and also kind of distinct, because you know there's a lot of these games right now. There's a lot of like small team survival horror throwbacks, right? Like I just reviewed another one that came out recently, although that it is bigger team. You know, we're gonna play another one next month, I think. There's a bunch of these, you know, and I still feel like Alyssa has like something that makes it feel like it stands out. It doesn't, it also like, even I think mechanically it really is like a Resident Evil. You know, it's a big house, interlocking puzzles, like getting acquainted with everything. It's a little bit more action focused. I was thinking also a lot about Dino Crisis playing this. But the like doll clockwork stuff is such a different flavor than mm-hmm. those games have, right? It and I sort of like that, you know, it's not really particularly scary, but it has this sort of eerie fairy tale vibe to it that I think is really nice, and that is also not kind of in the emotional space that like a Silent Hill is, you know. It does feel like it has a distinctive sort of aesthetic, right? Even though it is also such a throwback.
Yeah, parts of it felt very Crow Country to me.
Yes, yeah. I think it's similar in that it's very playful, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
But yeah. And also like Toy Yedic, you know.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the enemies you're fighting are actual action figures, basically, or dolls, right? So but yeah, I think, I mean, we can talk about, so basically the game follows the title character, Alyssa, who is like a soldier in a, like, I'm not entirely sure, like vaguely sort of Napoleonic maybe, or, you know, late 18th, early 20th century, late 19th, early 20th century vibe. This spy has stolen blueprints. You go into the small village with a partner to scope it out, and you find the guy, you start following him, and you get attacked by weird doll people, knocked out, and then dragged into a fun house of horrors, and you're trying to make your way out. And that's essentially it. Like, it's pretty light on plot. There is some, you know, there's some pickups in the house. Different sections of the house seem to be like built by or occupied by different people who are like using this like magic doll tech to like create these living things and stuff. But it's not very plot forward, I'd say. I'm trying to think. You get helped by, well, like little hand puppets that run a shop, and then they also have like a giant wardrobe with a woman's face named Charlotte, which I thought was funny. Yeah. And when you kill enemies, they drop gears that you can then exchange for ammo and med packs and new weapons and new clothes that also give you different things, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that's also, I think that's one of the big things that distinguishes it from a lot of survival horror is you are directly incentivized to kill everything.
Yeah.
In a way that neither Resident Evil or Silent Hill like encourage you to do, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I think in some ways you still definitely get the thing, because it's like there's that guy early in the game in like the kitchen who's like big and beefy, and then also will like deal multiple hits to you in a row. And so like in the early game, it just feels infeasible. And so I only got him like towards the end when I was like trying to hunt for tooth wheels for these gears. But there is still like a sense of like, like you kind of spend your money and get loaded up, and then you go through a section of the game and like kill everything in sight, and then you have enough money to like get the next thing that you want or need. And there's also some level of like, eventually you like unlock a second shop where you can get like modifications. You can like make yourself more doll-like, and that changes what ending you get. And then also, you know, gives you new abilities like attached to that. And that does feel sort of like a new game plus kind of configurement. Cause it's like, you can kind of either buy weapons or modifications. You can't really do both. So there is like a sense of replayability that a lot of these games have, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think about Pole, the shopkeeper guy?
I love the puppets. They're fun.
Yeah, I like them too. I like that they say thank you when you buy things. I like that when you pull out your gun and point it at them, they like duck underneath a little hole in the wall.
Yeah.
That's cute.
I like how the second puppet is just like nonsense. Nonsense noises are coming out of his mouth the entire time.
Yeah. Well, it's also like a guy you fight and then he shows up as like a little puppet in the thing. Pretty silly.
It weirdly feels very Soulsy.
Yeah, I understand what you mean by that for sure.
Just like the rewards for killing enemies, and then like you kill the boss and you can unlock like their weapons basically.
Mm-hmm.
And like an armor set. Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
I don't think it really served the game much. But it was interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it is I just kind of like the, because you can't get enough ammo pickups to like do everything you need to do. I guess like in theory you can like buy, there is like a melee weapon and you can also punch things, but that's not very effective. But you can get like a saber, and the saber also lets you block attacks. So like in theory, if you get really good with the saber, you don't have to get ammo. But some bosses, like kind of tough. Like they're really not designed to be fought hand to hand. Unless you're like a sicko. Right? Mm. And you don't find ammo out in the world, really. Right? Like a little bit, especially the beginning. But as time goes on, the expectation is more that you will buy from the shop, right? Like that is the economy of the game is based around purchasing things.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think it gives it a really different flavor. It does feel, I mean, on one hand, this game is also kind of just hard. And I died a lot, and also dying sucks because, you know, you like lose your stuff or you, and also you have to pay to save, right? You have to like pop a pinwheel to save. And so like whenever you like going on a spending splurge, you have to think about like, okay, but like I do have to save. And then like, how long will it be before I get more pinwheels and can save again? You know, and the game's like good at giving you stuff consistently. And like ahead of the stealth segment we talked about earlier, like there's a little enemy that dies in a cutscene, and then you can pick up the pinwheels from it and use those to save. So it's like it's conscious of like how this stuff works, but it is like there is like a weight placed on like a very specific kind of resource management that's like about spending and not really about searching, right? And about navigating like high times and low times. Like it's more about like preparing for sections where you'll be far away from the shop, right? Because usually when you're moving through a place you have money because you're killing things, right? So and I don't think it's all bad. I think it's cool in some ways, or at least like, but I do think that that sense of like getting to know a place and getting to know the enemies in that place and being able to like navigate around them, dodge them, right, is kind of gone. Like that is not really an element of this as much. It's there for sure, but it's like, and especially like later in the game when you get like really powerful weapons, then it's like, yeah, like why wouldn't you? Like you can just use two shotgun blasts to kill this thing, and then you're like, and then you get money. You get money.
Yeah, I felt like the saber was basically required for early game.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you're just like burning ammo, and then.
No, I think I got it like mid game, and I wish I had gotten it earlier. Like it was way more useful than I was expecting it to be.
Yeah. Especially like. I don't know. So much of this game is just like, because the first time you go through an area, once you kill an enemy, it doesn't respawn.
Yeah.
And so you're also kind of, if you don't kill it, you're kind of inconvenienced by the possibility of the monster grabbing you and then reducing your health. So like,
yes. Yeah,
it is. Mm-hmm. It is a net loss if you don't kill the enemy.
Yeah, and like so, some areas do repopulate, right? So you'll still get the like tension of going through something.
Yeah, but it's always after you kill a. It's always after you complete a segment of the game.
Yes, so, totally.
Like, just for the sake of like progressing through the game, it behooves you not to kill the enemies.
Yeah,
which I think is unfortunate. I don't really like the idea of rewarding combat in a game where the combat is like very clunky.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Especially like the aiming is very weird.
Yeah, even though it has this like great quality of life thing, which is like the little reticle will light up in your little ammo, like that shows the ammo counter. There's like a little reticle that will light up whenever your sights are on something. But there's like enemies that are like low to the ground, and it's really hard to like get a bead on them. And like there's a couple things. And some of those enemies, like in particular, it's like it's better just use the saber for them.
Yeah.
Because you have a wider range, right?
Yeah, I picked up the saber before going into the like carnival. Area.
Yeah, God, I did not have the saber during that whole segment, and that was, I wish I had.
It was, yeah, no, it's those ghosts on the tricycles are very cute, but trying to shoot them is impossible.
Yeah, it's tough. Oh, you're so right.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I keep getting distracted by this fucking dog.
I'm really sorry. That's like, that is like truly the sound that drives you mad, you know, or whatever. What was I? Oh, I, one thing I do think is really strong is like the enemy variety. And sometimes you just encounter like weird shit that's only in one room, like in the carnival section, when you like dodge the little pendulums, you know, that are swinging over the little bridge, and then you go inside and you like walk towards the thing, and there's this little curtain enclosed corridor, and then these giant like faces just start like hopping out of that, and they're gigantic, and so if you like don't run past them quickly, then they'll just like quarter you next to the door and like murder you. And that like that thing of just like going into a room and seeing something weird and being like, oh, what? Or like the ballerinas with the long, long legs. Like that stuff is just like there. Yeah, it's I mean, like it's very whimsical in a certain kind of sense. Right. And I think that like that also that sensation of like you don't know how many hits this thing is going to take. Right.
Yeah.
And particularly early on when you've just got like your pistol and you've got your one shot shotgun, you're like, fuck, like this guy's big. What am I supposed to do? You know, and that's like a good feeling. Even if it's not scary, it's sort of, there's like a scrambling quality to it.
I remembered what I was going to say.
Yes.
And I think this is a huge game design sin that I think is indicative of a lot of choices about this game that I don't like, which is this game doesn't support the D-pad.
Yes!
There's no input for the D-pad for a game where tank controls is very useful.
Yeah.
It's D-pads only make sense if you're using a D-pad. Tank controls only make sense if you're using a D-pad.
Yeah. Because
it comes out of like an era of 2D games that, you know, you're bound by like the D-pad as the only mechanism for control. And so,
yeah, it's like, yeah, you take that away. You don't have to play Silent Hill 1 with a DualShock, right? You can get like the PlayStation 1 controller that just has the D-pad on it and you can play it.
Yeah. It's very different from using a joystick because, like, as at least for me, if I'm playing a game with tank controls, I at least know that when I'm hitting up on the D-pad, my character is going to move forward. Whereas for me, if it's just a joystick, I lose that entirely. And so I played this game with the quote unquote modern control scheme because my brain couldn't wrap itself around using the joystick for tank controls. I don't know if that's just a me thing or like what.
No,
but it was very bothersome, especially because there's nothing else tied to the D-pad.
No, I mean, that happened multiple times where I was like wanting to aim a little more granularly or was getting annoyed at like, because I kept with the joystick, I felt like I was swaying all the time, you know, like I was turning slightly one way or the other because it doesn't really feel built around like half inputs, you know, because that's the thing is like with the joystick, it's like you have a 360 degree directional thing. And then with the D-pad, it's like you just have like left, right, forward. And so then being able to stop, turn left, go forward, right? And then you can sometimes do like the half thing where you're pressing both buttons or whatever. But like there is like a, you can give it a deliberate quality, right? That sometimes is useful, yeah. And like I think when we played like Silent Hill, and when I replayed Silent Hill 2, you know, a couple months ago, like I use the D-pad sometimes just to get that kind of control element, right? And so that was something that I was missing. And then also, like, I just generally prefer using the D-pad in a menu. Like, if I can do that, I'll do that. Right?
Yeah.
I was frustrated with that as well, and it did feel like a weird oversight. And I guess, like, maybe I could have tried to figure out a way to remap it or something, but I just didn't bother.
Yeah, I played on Switch, and you can't remap it, so I was just stuck. And yeah, I mean, especially like even like when we played Resident Evil Remake, I was using the D-pad the entire time. So yeah, it was very annoying to me. And just felt very disconnected from what the aesthetic of the game is. Because if this was a PS1 game, you wouldn't have analog control. You would just be using the D-pad.
Yeah, for sure. No, I think that's like a weird... This has a console release, right? I'm not making that up.
Yeah, I played on Switch.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And you can't rewind the controls, so...
Right, yeah.
Or you can rewind the buttons, but not like the sticks, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway.
No, that's tough.
And it just felt indicative of like the way this game is designed, where like you're compelled to kill all the enemies in an area, and then on top of that, you're using the analog stick the whole time. I don't know. It just felt very in conflict with kind of the genre a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think it. The part of the reason I was thinking about Dino Crisis was just that that is so much more like an action game with a Silent Hill with a survival horror vocabulary, right? Mm-hmm. Like both in terms of tone and in terms of, and this I think is kind of halfway between that, and like it does. I think that is sort of the thing is that, like. It's not, I don't think it's the most successful. Like the fact that there's like a block in this game that you can like block attacks from enemies with the saber.
I did not even know that was, yeah.
Yeah.
I used the saber for like the first half of the game and I didn't even know that you can block.
Yeah,
it.
You can, I forget what, it's like the reload button. If you hit that, then you can do like a little block. Which like makes there's an achievement for beating the like plant knight woman with just the saber.
Yeah.
That's what makes that feasible, I think, like doable.
This game also has an issue where I mentioned earlier it's very trial and error. Ish.
Yes, yeah.
Where like you would be progressing in an area and then hit a boss, and then because you weren't necessarily expecting a boss, you would just die and then have to redo the part of the area you were on.
Yes, yeah, totally.
That happened to me basically every area of the game.
Yeah, well, no, I think it's sometimes like, yeah, you don't. That unpredictability I was talking about others, maybe just a double-edged sword, that it's like you don't really get a sense of like how to manage, because it does feel like even things like weapon selection, it feels like it all relies on you having a prior knowledge of what is going to come in an encounter.
Yeah.
Right? And so the first time through, like the only way to have that knowledge is either you're reading a guide, right? Or you're just experiencing it, and I think sometimes that can lead to frictions where it's like, I mean, I was talking with a friend about this game and she was like, I just got too frustrated, like I didn't enjoy, like I wanted to like it but I was too annoyed, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that like that is a complaint that is commonly levied against against survival horror. I don't know why I keep saying Silent Hill, fuck. SH. You know, survival horror games is that they're just too annoying. And I think even in that bracket, this game's kind of annoying. Like, it's kind of frustrating. Yeah.
I think when I got to the turret sequence and when I died, mm-hmm. I felt like if I wasn't playing this for pod, I would have just stopped playing.
Like, I'm good. I'll just watch it on YouTube. It's all fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think that sequence is
that
like,
one specifically, you like you do that stealth sequence, which is also bad, but it's fine. I found it fine. And then you're exploring and then you just hit that sequence. And then like if you didn't save, you're fucked. So,
yeah, totally. Yeah, I think at that point I was like consulting a guide on Steam, like user made guide, pretty regularly, so I like knew that it was coming.
Was it the same guy? What is it, the same guy that's like, hey, I can't help you with these puzzles, man. You're just gonna have to figure that out.
Yes, literally. Well, because so many of them are randomly generated in some element, you know, or yeah. Because some of the puzzles are so annoying. There's like so many varieties of like moving block puzzles.
I think almost all of the puzzles are bad in this game.
Yeah. They do feel like the most perfunctory element, that it's the most like this is a thing that's in these games and so it has to be included, right?
But if they were just like stupid easy puzzles, I would forgive it.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's that part in the game where you go in the furnace and then you have to like you go and you get into a Star Wars closing door room.
Oh,
and
yes.
To pick that lock.
Oh,
and I
died
to that like 15 times.
Well, yeah. And then it's so annoying to go like because you have to go and you have to watch like a cutscene and then you have to like crawl through the vent and watch her fall down, and yeah. then like it, yeah, no, it's
and the puzzle. Yeah. The mechanics of the puzzle, like, by the time, like, you figure out the mechanics of the puzzle, you're dead.
Yeah.
And it's awful.
Yeah, it's really annoying. Well, and just also so many, like, and part of this was, like, I did play some of this game, like, with a stream on in the background or something. Because I just got a second monitor. And so now I'm living a two-monitor life. I'm putting a VTuber on the other screen.
Yeah,
doing whatever, you know, doing whatever. And so there were a couple times, a lot of times, that like that was great and it was like fun to do. But also sometimes it was like, oh, I think this is not helping me. Like that book puzzle in the library where it's like, we're just groaning because it's fucking annoying.
Also, there's like no explanation for how to solve that puzzle.
Yeah, well, it's like, it's every time you push, it's every time you have to get all the books even, but when you push a book in, then they some push out until, anyway, so you just have to, like, arrange it. It took me forever to do.
And then the end goal is for the book to pop out and then open.
Right.
And then you get a key.
What? Yeah, it's, I don't know. The thing I like that's sort of puzzle adjacent is like having the ring of keys that are sort of themed, and then like you kind of are like, oh, like I need to get this key, and then like remembering all the places in the house where it's like, oh, I saw the fish key here or the right hand key here.
Well, that's
and then
the
like
thing.
Thinking through like the house navigation stuff is good, I think.
Yeah, that's the thing that's frustrating is like the actual like unlocking areas and going through the areas and then finding a key to open the door in a different area, and then somehow that area loops back to like a previous save point. Like all that stuff is really good. You love to see it. It's classic.
Yes. Yeah.
But then it's just paired with like very annoying game mechanics.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking a little about Silent Hill puzzles just while we were talking, just because those a lot, most Silent Hill puzzles, like if you're, unless you're playing it on the hard puzzle thing, which I've never done, because that seems like annoying. It's like that friend in high school who's like really into riddles, you know? I feel like that maybe not be a universal human experience, but it's something I experienced, I think. I was in drama, okay? Like, it was dweebs, you know? We were all dweebs out here.
Yeah.
Fuck. Oh, just that, like, those puzzles have a bite to them, but they're also simple for the most part, right? Like, and then sometimes there's like a strong thematic kind of question or element to them, right? Like there's all those puzzles in Silent Hill 2 that are about execution, right? Or about punishment. You know, there's just things that feel like interested in sort of the general thematic space of the game. And yeah, Alyssa's, I mean, it just feels sort of arbitrary. Whereas like the house itself is such a cool location and it's one that's so evocative. And it just feels like that doesn't make it into the puzzles, like, for the most part, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, you do a little slide box puzzle. Oh, you do a little, like, thing. Oh, you have to turn on the candles in the right order and go find the chart somewhere else in the house that lets you do that. And there's, like, a bunch of puzzles like that where it's just, like, going to a location in the house where you can see the solution and then going back and, like, finding the puzzle so you can solve it, right? There's just sort of a... It just feels sort of detached from what, like, I think, like, so much of the game feels, like, really cohesive and, like, fun. It has such a distinct aesthetic vibe to it that that consideration, I think, just doesn't make it into the puzzles at all.
I also think that, like, because the endings of the game don't really amount to much.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's hard to like shape the puzzles around something that's like thematically relevant when there's not really much themes going on in the game.
For sure.
You know?
No, I think that's definitely true. I mean, there's something about, like, being a doll, I guess. You know, you dress Alyssa up, right? You're puppeting her around. She, you know, she can become more doll-like, right? That's, like, one of the endings is her becoming, like, queen of the dolls or whatever. I was playing this game and I'm like, this guy is such a doll pervert. Like, it's kind of crazy.
Well, the important to say is, like, his wife voices Alyssa and is named Alyssa.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
His social media bio is just like making games with my wife, which is like so wholesome.
That's really cute. I love that.
Yeah.
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 Wow, that's lovely. I don't mean to demean this guy at all. To be clear. I'm celebratory. I think this game is like horny in a really fun way. You know.
What was your favorite costume?
I aesthetically love the costume that lets you like find items and enemies, like the mask with the antlers and like the big austere dress. I thought that was cool.
Yeah.
I do love the like fish scale swimsuit outfit with the thigh highs.
I'm staring at my screenshot of the fish one.
It's awesome.
And I'm holding a fucking AK.
Yeah, that's
with
right.
The fish outfit.
That's right. Yeah. Like, I think it's really nice that, like, the dress up, which is, like, in a lot of survival horror games, right? Like, it's in most Resident Evil games, it's in Fatal Frame, but they're just sort of, they don't really mean anything. It's nice to have that it's, like, you get stuff from it. There's a gameplay function, but also, like, It's fun to get an outfit and dress up. It's nice.
Yeah.
You know?
I think the one that I actually used the most was the military outfit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did eventually switch to the leather armor because that gives you, like, extra defense.
Oh, yeah, but... that one's cool. That one's like a fucking, you're dressing up as Robin Hood or something.
Yeah, it's very like Assassin's Creed sort of vibe.
Yeah.
No, it's cool.
Oh, this game needs the Final Fantasy 13-2 Mass Effect armor tie-in.
So true. We gotta have that like the body art, the, you know, the plate armor bespeckled with the blood dragon from Dragon Age Origins.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
But because the endings of the game are tied to whether or not you engaged with the enhancements or not, it just felt like,
yeah,
I don't know. Like on paper, it's like a totally fine idea, but I never felt tempted to get those enhancements, and they cost so much in the store that
it just didn't
seem like a good trade-off.
I think it is really designed to be like a thing you do on a repeat playthrough.
Yeah, dude,
you know?
Game Plus, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, I just think that's sort of the thing is like there's the thing with, because you, the boss fight, the on-rails boss fight. So basically you do the stealth segment where there's like these Pegasus guys that have like machine gun turrets in their heads and you have to dodge them. And then you like find the spy who is like used the doll powers of the house to like grow angel wings. And you like do this like turret segment where you're like running around the certain part of the building and like firing at him and stuff. And then you kill him. And then he's like, listen, like the emperor has plans for the blueprints and they're bad. You got to find out the truth of the blueprints, right? And then, like, the ending that you get when you don't do any of the enhancements is, like, her waking up in her, like, apartment in whatever. And then, like, finding a note on the piano or on the dresser or whatever that is, like, the truth about the blueprints. And then her looking shocked. But it's, like, we don't really have any context for, like, what that is or what that means. Like, we've spent this whole game, like, in this nightmare enclosed, like, a world that's literally underground that's segmented off from everything. Right? And so I think it is, yeah, like, I just agree. I think it's hard to, like, get a sense of, like, there's a lot of, like, sequel tease stuff in the endings, I feel, that also feels kind of like, I don't know what this does, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Did you, or, I mean, I don't, do you have any thoughts there? Because I have a follow-up question, but.
I agree. I just having that be the note that the game ends on felt so underwhelming.
Yeah. I did love
the military stuff is already very vague, and so to have the ending hinge on just that, didn't feel great. Well,
I'm curious because the game, the sequel that was announced like recently, follows the guy that you're with at the beginning, and it's also a co-op game. So there's like, even if you're playing alone, there's like a computer partner that follows you around. So anyway, maybe you and I, when that comes out, we can boot this up together or something. see what's cooking. But yeah, no, I agree. Did you rescue the doll, Elise, I think is her name?
No, because I thought she was an enemy, so I just shot her.
Oh my god! Whoa! That's crazy. Did the mother like chase you the whole game?
No.
Or she just, okay, she does like stop. Because, so basically for context, there's like a room you go into where there's like just a big woman. big woman doll. And then she like breaks out. And then sometimes randomly when you like enter a room, she'll appear and she's like invincible. You can't kill her or like wound her. And she'll grab you and deal tons of damage to you. And then you can like encounter like her daughter ? Who is like, like almost like a little Red Riding Hood doll. She's missing a leg, and you like do a little like wave battle with enemies, which is also really annoying to do. And then when you get through that, you can get her leg back, and then she'll help you in a boss fight, and then gets like vanished by the mother later, and that can play into a couple different endings you can get. Like when you become Queen of the Dolls, like sometimes Elise is there and gives you a crown, depending on like how you got that ending. I thought that stuff was like sweet. Like I liked that there's like a person that feels human that you can help and that then helps you. I mean, that's very Soulsy, actually, come to think of it. But like, it's a nice little beat. But again, it feels kind of slight. I don't know that there's a lot there. But
yeah.
But it's like, I don't know, to me, it's always hype when you like help someone in a game and you become like endeared to them. And then they like show up in the boss room and they've got their hood up and they've got dual wielding pistols. And you're like, yeah, like, that's my girl, you know, whatever. That's fun.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Oh, but yeah, that's very funny that you just murdered her. Because she just looked like. Yeah, it doesn't. It doesn't change the ending without enhancements. What was the other thing I was going to say with that? Because also she does look like some of the enemies, like some of the first beginning enemies you encounter.
Yeah.
Look like her. Yeah. God, I did that whole wave fight without the saber, coming to think of it. I like held off on buying the saber for too long because it's also cheap. It's like 12 pinwheels. Like I should have bought that. It's helpful.
It's essential.
Yeah.
It makes the game so much more playable.
I did see there was someone on the Steam forums complaining about the saber because he's like, the saber ruins the effect. Like you don't need to use any of the guns. And I'm like, bro, that's not true. That's actually not true. And B, he was like, he was like, because there's the hot spring. Did you do the hot spring stuff where like you can undress and get in the hot spring and you'll heal slowly?
Oh, I didn't know that's what that was.
Yeah.
But yeah,
it kind of doesn't signal it. And like, it's also, you can't tell what level your health is at when you're in the hot spring. And so a couple times I would like get out and be like, oh, I still have a ways to go. And it takes forever. And this is the thing is, he was like, I don't have to use med kits because I can go to the hot tub and just refill my health. But also it's annoying and takes forever. And there was someone in the comments that's like, maybe it was designed that way. Maybe it's trying to disincentivize you from using it, and other people like value their time more than you do. Anyway, I thought that was very funny. I don't think that having a weapon that's like useful a lot of times but also like tricky to use in some circumstances like breaks the meta of the game.
No. Yeah, especially when it's like cheap and like very useful to gain momentum in terms of like collecting currency.
Yeah. Like, yeah. But then it's like
totally fine.
Yeah, it's like you can't getting through that last boss fight or like any of the boss fights with just that is like annoying. You wouldn't want to do it. You know.
Yeah.
You simply would not want to do it. I'm trying to think if there's like boss fight stuff that stuck out to me, any segments that stuck out to me. I like the clown guys that have the big clubs and that make like little clown shoe sounds and then just like bop you on the head. That's pretty good.
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah, I think that's like the enemy design is really strong like throughout. The little spider guys are creepy. They're so annoying. That's like a saber, or the saber's really handy.
Yeah.
I also like the way that I think the game is also good at making like each weapon fill a niche, you know, and that there's some level of just like preference, but there's also like stuff that's really useful in certain contexts that isn't as useful in other contexts. Like the machine gun is kind of like this, or the AK, right? Where it's like some enemies it's really useful and some it's like negligible or, you know, and I think that's like, yeah, it feels like it's balanced in a nice way that everything has like a place in the sort of scheme of the game.
Mm-hmm. One story beat I actually did like was like after you defeat the boss in the garden.
Mm-hmm.
The lighting like completely changes to be daytime and you're like, and then like you're on the bridge and you hear the boss like talk about like her beautiful garden and how like it sucks that it like can't be real or something like that.
Yeah.
And then it shifts back to nighttime. That was like the one like, oh, there's like crumbs here of like,
yes,
cool,
yeah,
evocative story stuff that doesn't really go anywhere but was like super cool.
No, yeah, that's a really cool, I agree, that was such a striking moment. I mean, I like with like the stuff where they're chasing, because like I like when you go up to the chapel at the end of the game and you're like gonna blow up the finger of God to do the final boss fight stuff, and then it's all like the gloomy red lighting instead of the like ultra bright white lights that you had before. Like it's really nice. Like I think I don't know that this stuff always succeeds, but kind of we were talking about the house stuff. Like the game is conscious sometimes of you having to backtrack through a section or go through a section again. And then that being something that then like the location changes in some way, like visually or practically, right? I think it's all really nicely done.
I like the sound design. It feels very like sounds coming out of an old game console sound chip.
Yes, totally. Yeah.
It's really cool.
Yeah. No, I like the carnival soundtrack is good.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm feeling warmly towards the game in this moment. Upon reflection.
It's very our definition of a cozy game, you know?
Yes, totally. Yeah. 100%.
Where like you go into an area, you see a really neat looking pre-rendered background and you're just like, gaming.
That's living, baby. Yeah, totally. Absolutely.
Yeah, I had a decent time despite frustrations with it.
Yeah, I also bought this ages ago and not like for the show, so I'm like glad that I finally got around to it.
Yeah.
And like, and yeah, I appreciated it. And I'm curious about what the second game will be like. I thought this one was really nice. Yeah. Even though it is annoying. It's super annoying.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, do we want to... We didn't really solicit questions, so I don't know that we have any.
No, completely forgot to do that.
Yeah, no, I... We can figure it out. I'm like, I would like to have some sort of, like, system in my head of, like, when to post on Blue Sky or whatever, but I don't have it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, should we talk about what we're playing next month?
Sure.
Yeah, we're going to play... Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, no. You go ahead.
We're going to play Sorry We're Closed, which is also like a indie throwback game, survival horror game. That's a little bit Killer 7 because there's like first person stuff where you're like shooting weak points. You know, you got third eye abilities. But yeah, apparently I've just heard really good things about this. Have been wanting to play it. And I'm using this as an excuse to do it. So
yeah, it looks sick.
Yeah, it looks cool.
And apparently a month ago it was ported to console, so
oh, there you go.
It's on everything.
Hell yeah.
And also won a GLAAD award.
Oh, won a GLAAD award?
It was nominated for a GLAAD award.
Oh, okay. What is the GLAAD video game stuff?
That's the GLAAD crazy. Video Award for Outstanding Video Game.
Yeah. Let's see, how long is this winners and nominees? Okay, it's been like 6 years.
It was beaten by Dragon Age, the Veil Guard.
Oh my god. This is truly like know, an... Yeah. This is kind of an ignominious... Life is Strange Double Exposure.
Yeah.
Dustborn.
Fear the Spotlight is also here. Which is funny.
Baldur's Gate 3 won last year. This is stupid.
Overwatch 2 was nominated last year.
Okay, in 2021, Last of Us Part 2 and Tell Me Why won. What are we doing? Is there gay stuff at Psychonauts 2? I've completely forgotten. I guess there is, but I can't remember what it is.
Jack Black's character.
Yes.
There's
okay.
A whole like wedding sequence.
That's right. I totally remember that now. I'm kind of I don't know if this might hit some viewers hard, but I'm kind of a Psychonauts 2 hater. I think it's okay.
Oh, okay.
I Psychonauts 1 is great. I love Psychonauts 1.
That's nuts. That's a nuts take for me.
I don't know what to tell you. Signalis got nominated in 2023. That's interesting. I don't. Okay, this Haven. Did you hear? Sorry, I'm like moving on. We could talk about Psychonauts if we want to.
We shouldn't because of the boycott. But
oh, you're right. You're right. You're right. You're right. This Haven thing where it's like a video game where you play as like a couple that is like they're taboo in some way. And then they're like living on some planet trying to make their life separate from like the cultures that have like thrown them out, essentially. And then like they added an update. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, this is the this is the UK game. like one character's name is U, the other name's character's K, and it's about Brexit or whatever, right?
Yeah, I think what? That's crazy. Yeah, that's it is UK.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
That's like the only thing I know about this game.
Wow. Well, because okay, they add an update where you can like change, you can make the main characters like gay men or lesbians as opposed to straight people. And I kind of fundamentally feel uncomfortable about that. I understand that it's like kind of tacky to make like a forbidden love story about like a straight couple or whatever. Like I understand why people find that a little obnoxious, but like I do think it's fine. It's like okay for something to be about straight people. It's fine that something doesn't include you. I don't think that's like a problem. I don't think that's representationally unsound. Do you know what I'm saying? I feel just like I am fundamentally opposed, I guess, to this shift.
The only time where I've wanted this was Persona 3 Portable.
Right.
I just want to be gay in Persona 3 Portable, and I can't.
Yeah, no, I think I say this, but also it's like. Like I do, this is like I've been playing Rune Factory 1, and I am like, oh, I have to decide whether I want to be girl or whether I want to date girls in the future. Like, because I think Rune Factory 2, it's like you can play as a girl, but and I'm like, yeah, I don't really know what I want to do. Like, I think there is, I don't mean that these kind, but like the thing is, Haven's not a game of where it's like, oh, there's a player insert.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
You there's like romance options. It's a game where that's like about a specific story, and like the story doesn't change at all, right? It's just aesthetic appearances. But I don't know. I'm just not upset about straight people being in things. I'm not pressed about it.
The Google results for Haven game, it pulls up the Reddit, and the first Reddit thread is, does Haven ever get interesting? And then the top answer on Google is, it's interesting because it is horny.
But that's not true. What?
Yeah.
You can't look at these character designs. The audience is mid.
The audience is mid.
God damn. Well, yeah, I just... Yeah, it's whatever, I suppose. I just, like... I don't know that... Does Baldur's Gate 3 have great LGBTQ representation? Like, I think it's fine.
No, but it has it, so that's all that really matters, right?
Yeah, it's a big enough game that has it, I guess. Like, I don't know, I kind of wish... I do kind of wish that... The characters in Baldur's Gate 3 were not just, like... Well, this is also the Veil Guard thing, where, like, everyone's pan... I don't like it. I think there are characters like Will and they're just characters in that game that do not feel like they're into men to me. And like Carlack kind of feels like a lesbian to me. I don't know. I'm not definitive about these things. I just, you know. I think Will is straight. You know, that's what I think.
Will Graham, however, is not straight.
That's true. Yeah, I'm not denying that. But
when are we going to do a Hannibal podcast?
Ooh, when are we going to do a Hannibal podcast? I have a couple friends who are really into Hannibal, and I think
it's good.
Yeah, I know.
It's
I believe it.
The thing.
I believe it. I maybe should go.
You haven't seen it?
No, I haven't. I've, you know, seen memes, but that doesn't count, obviously. Who was the show creator?
Brian Fuller.
It was
a pretty big Tumblr show back in the day.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
We should watch that someday. It's very good. It's a very fun time.
Yeah.
Lawrence Fishburne is really good in it.
I believe it. I love Lawrence Fishburne so much.
Yeah. Great show. Any other miscellaneous things you want to talk about on pod?
Yeah. I was just thinking about Pushing Daisies, which I did watch and liked a lot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. Well, I think that's it.
What if Pushing Daisies, but Brian Fuller read one Junji Ito manga and then didn't stop making cool crime scenes just because he like read manga once? It's pretty good.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, I think that's it. Sorry, we're closed next month.
Yeah.
We didn't really talk about that. I do think the voice acting is super charming. In Alyssa. Yeah. I think that's very knowing that it's his wife, like, makes it better. But just like the weird like amateur quality of it is really nice. It's very pleasant.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, yeah, we'll catch you all next month. Thanks for tuning in.